With no fees or minimums, banking with Capital One is the easiest decision in the history of decisions. Even easier than deciding to listen to another episode of your favorite podcast. And with no overdraft fees, is it even a decision? That's banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/bank. Capital One N.A., member FDIC.
That Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, they just disagree on how.
We're gonna get across that wasteland, and we're gonna do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Chip Clark. There's Charles W. Wayne Action Bryant.
Brr.
And there's Jerry the Weather Roland. And they put the three of us together. You've got yourself the weather team of Stuff You Should Know.
That's right. This is a kind of a fun one that Dave Ruse helped us out with.
Yeah,
that
he
you commissioned.
Did a great job.
Weather people.
That's right. Weathercasters, broadcast meteorologists.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about not just meteorologists in general. This is a very specific subset of meteorologists. They're meteorologists who are on TV presenting the weather. TV weather people.
Yeah. This is Ken Cook.
Oh, I forgot about Ken Cook. Oh my gosh.
Dude, he's still around.
Really?
Yeah, and that's kind of the fun thing that you will see partially in this episode. And if you just are from a city that has local news, which is to say everywhere.
Right.
If you get a gig like this and you want to, and you don't do anything wrong.
Sure.
Like the idea from the weather, from the TV station is that they will have you for 30 years if you will stay on, because that's what they're after. They're after someone that the local audience bonds with, they trust, they know and love. These jobs don't go away unless you're just not any good at it for some reason. But if you lock in, like if you're like a Dallas Raines or a Ken Cook and you lock into your job as the local weather personality, you're set for life as long as you don't screw it up.
Yeah, which interestingly, like a little corollary to that, Chuck, is that low turnover makes the jobs really competitive.
Oh, sure.
I read that TV weather people are not friends with the other channels' weather people.
Really?
Yeah, it's super competitive from what I heard, which is strange, like because when you think of the TV weather person, they're like the friendliest, nicest person in the whole group.
Yeah, it's like the gang fight in Anchorman in the alley.
Yeah, and as we'll see, Anchorman, as hilarious as it was also incredibly accurate in a lot of ways.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we're talking about weathercasters, broadcast meteorologists, TV weather personalities. I'm going to give those examples every time.
No.
And there's a really long-standing joke that says, what other profession could you be wrong half of the time and still get paid $1 million? Yeah. Been around a very, very long time. And it kind of underscores just how people typically think of the weather person. They remember when the weather person gets it wrong a lot of times. But weather people are... Do you remember we talked about how incredibly stressful a court stenographer's job must be?
Mm-hmm.
I think the weather person on TV might have a job that's equally stressful to that.
You think?
Let's talk about the components of the weather person's job, Chuck.
I think it looks like a good gig. And in fact, I wanted for a very brief time, and I know I've mentioned this before, thought briefly in college about trying to be a weather person.
I don't.
Because I was into meteorology. As I mentioned before, I used to watch the Weather Channel with my best friend Rad in high school.
Yeah.
While we hung out. And I took a weather and climate course in college. And that further reinforced that I was like, this is really cool. And I was a pre-journalism major. I thought I wanted to be like a broadcast news kind of reporter type.
Right.
But I thought, no one, and this was, you know, 19-year-old Chuck, I was like, nobody's trying to be a weather person these days because it's so uncool. Like, that would probably be a pretty easy gig to get.
Yeah, not
like,
true.
Little did I know.
Dude, and there's so much work to it too. So first of all, not everyone's a meteorologist, and this is a big bone of contention among the meteorologists who do present on TV.
Yeah, most of them are now, but not all of them.
Yes, but from what I saw, by most, that means slightly over 50%.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's not like the vast majority from what I've seen.
I guess I'm thinking most major cities, but yeah, you're right. I guess
sure.
Sheboygan doesn't have a meteorologist.
I think if you are an actual meteorologist on TV, you command more money and probably a little more respect. Who knows?
Of course.
But while you're working, so say you are a meteorologist.
Okay.
So you have to have an understanding of how the weather works.
Mm-hmm.
You have to understand how you can communicate that understanding to the public in an understandable way. So understanding all around.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have a good personality. Like, you can't be like me, some dark schmo, you know? You have to be nice. People want to like you, and you got to be likable in return. You also have to have, like, a lot of poise, because you're up there on live TV. Don't forget, mm-hmm. all of this is live.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I didn't know about weather people, they don't have a script. And if you ever watch a weather person deliver their spiel in a couple minutes, most of the time, they do not mess up. They don't have to correct themselves. They don't like accidentally say half of a word.
Rain instead of snow.
They're like the opposite of us, right? Yeah. They do not screw up. And sometimes they do, of course, but most of the time they don't.
That happens. Yeah.
Right. So the fact that they know what they're talking about, they're getting it across in a logical manner that's spread out in like some understandable way that you can follow that makes sense on live TV while manipulating images on a green screen that mm-hmm. they can't see except for monitors on either side, while also just being fun and chipper and doing it all within your time limit. I say that is a high stress, really admirable job.
Okay. Here's what I say.
Okay.
That's your take.
Okay.
My take, admirable for sure, high stress for week one.
Okay.
And then I think you're on cruise control for the next 35 years.
Maybe not week one, but I see what you mean. Sure.
And I'm not saying, again, not saying that they're not doing a good job or whatever, but I bet you once they have that down, it's a pretty great job.
Sure.
That's not super stressful.
All right.
That's just
fine.
My guess.
Yeah, no, you won me over to your side. I'm usually, my opinion's almost always correct, but in this case, it wasn't.
Yeah. Let's go back in time, though, to 1870. When a very sort of monumental thing happened in the United States, weather-wise, it's when the National Weather Service was founded. And they, from the get-go, said, here's our mission. We're going to collect data from all over the country from these weather stations. We're going to send it out on the telegraph, and people can put it in newspapers if they want. And that's just what happened starting in the 1880s with New York World. They started putting their own local weather forecast on the front page. And then it took another, probably 50 years or so, maybe not quite, before a paper would do the national weather. And that would, of course, be the New York Times, did a national weather map.
Yeah. And so weather's always basically been associated with news, like right from the get-go. And as news has evolved in the way that news is delivered, the weather's evolved alongside it. So when the news made the jump to radio, weather was right there basically from the outset. And there was a guy named Jimmy Fidler, and he was out of WLBC in Muncie, Indiana. And
Muncie?
I
think it's Muncie.
If it were Italian, it'd be Muncie.
Oh, I love Muncie. We should go with
okay. It is Muncie. I know that because it's not that far from Toledo. So thank you for correcting me.
I apologize about my asthma throat too. If people think I'm dying, I'm not. It's just pollen season.
Dude, it is so bad up here. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's really bad.
Yeah. 3,000s we're talking about, people.
Is that what the level is?
A couple hundred is high. Yes.
Yeah, because usually I don't get it too bad, but I've been wheezy and asthmatic for like 6 weeks.
Plus, there's also the nice little bonus of it being cold, super cold, like February cold here right now. And it's not like it was cold on one day. It's set in cold. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah. And I should also point out that laughing triggers like that asthma wheeze and cough.
Well, I'll try not to be funny. I'm not making any promises.
I know. I'm trying to contain my laugh because if not, I'll go.
I would find that satisfying.
All right. Try and kill me.
Okay. So anyway, he was out of WLBC in Muncie, Indiana, and he's known as basically the first weatherman, the guy who created the what we saw as the weatherman and eventually weather person, all the way back in the 1930s.
Yeah. And that's sort of the more personality-driven weather reporter.
Yeah.
As we'll see, you know, with, well, we can talk about it right now, actually. As we'll see, if TV, as TV became a thing, that sort of came and went over the years until it firmly established itself as like whether people should be probably just a little more personality plus. But he was also the first human to be on the television reporting the weather. TV in the late 1930s and early 40s was not a very big deal, only about, and it's hard to find good numbers, but Dave found a stat that said about 6,000 TV sets nationwide.
Man.
After the war, that became, in like less than a decade, close to 10 million TV sets. So
isn't that crazy?
That's when that boom happened. But he, old Jimmy Fiddler, went on TV in Cincinnati, either in 1939 or 1940, as the first human TV weatherman.
Yes. And I'm glad that you, caveated that with human, because a lot of people are like, oh no, the first weather person of all time was Woolly Lamb, a cartoon character, a lamb, if you didn't catch that from the name, who was just a total shill for botany wrinkle-proof ties. Botany, I take it, is the same as the Botany 500 company that outfitted guys like Rod Serling and all of them in the 50s.
Oh, nice looking suits.
So Woolly had a jingle that was that preceded every forecast. And I have not heard this, but I guarantee just from reading it, I can recreate it. You ready?
Let's hear it.
It's hot. It's cold. It's rain. It's fair. It's, oh, wait, I already screwed it up. Hold on. Let me try again.
All right. A one and a two.
It's hot, it's cold, it's rain, it's fair, it's all mixed up together, but I, as Botany's Woolly Lamb, predict tomorrow's weather.
I think that you nailed it.
That's the only way you could
10 out of 10.
Thank you.
Or what was Star Search? 4¾ stars.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
Woolly Lamb, though, was a full year or more after Fiddler, so I don't see why the date is under dispute, so I don't get that. It's probably just an internet thing.
Yeah, I don't know if Fiddler was considered a big liar or something, because Dave says that they there's no archival footage of it. But if he said that he did
it. Well, that's because they didn't record that stuff back then.
Right, exactly. Remember in our sitcoms episode, they didn't start recording it until the late 40s, early 50s, maybe. It was just live, not even live to tape, right? But the fact that he's saying he did it, I don't see why they would be like, no, you're lying. It was really Woolly Lamb.
Yeah, it was in his obituary, so I'll go with that.
But there was one other thing that Jimmy Fiddler did that created the persona of the TV weatherman, in addition to that whole, you know, that the personality that you were talking about. He took weather data from all different sorts of places and put it together and interpreted it in a way that he could then present it to the public, who would then know what the weather was going to be like tomorrow or the day after. That was Jimmy Fiddler who created that.
That's right. And that set the standard.
It did. And Woolly Lamb kind of set a weird standard too in the post-war years, right?
I don't know about this. What happened?
Oh, well, so Woolly Lamb. So imagine a cartoon lamb as your weather person on your local TV station.
I'm there.
Kind of weird. There was a period in the late 40s, early 50s, where that would kind of be a fairly normal thing, where in addition to cartoon lambs, there were puppets.
Yeah, I get what you mean. Sure.
There were other cartoons. There were all the clowns, all sorts of just weird stuff, rhyming guys. Like, we'll talk about a little bit of that. But Woolly Lamb and Jimmy Fiddler really set the stage for weather people to come. And I think, Chuck, I have just set the stage for our first ad break.
Well done. Hey, everybody. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good. You're feeling low and not sure you can pull out a win. And that's when you have to dig deep, lift your head up, and say to yourself, time to get back in the game.
pull off some bank heists, and take as much of your friends' money as you possibly can.
That's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies.
That's right. You can play on countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball, and you can charge other players rent for your iconic properties.
Plus, you can even work with your friends to crack open community chests in tournaments to get rewards and climb the leaderboard.
So get back out there, put on your game face, and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play.
Hey, everybody, it's time you heard about Squarespace. Squarespace has the tools you need to create and sell your own website. Whether it's an online course or custom merch, Squarespace has you covered.
That's right. Courses is a great program. You can start with a professional layout that fits your brand, upload video lessons to teach techniques and skills, and tailor your course with a powerful Fluid Engine editor.
That's right. With Fluid Engine, which is a next-generation website design system, by the way, it's never been easier for anyone to unlock unbreakable creativity.
That's right. And don't forget the commerce side, because after that, you can charge a one-time fee or you can even sell a subscription.
Yeah. So turn your creativity into income with Squarespace courses. And right now, go to squarespace.com/stuff for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code STUFF to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Squarespace.
That Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, they just disagree on how.
We're gonna get across that wasteland, and we're gonna do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.
All right. So I mentioned before TV's booming post-war, close to 10 million TV sets in the end of the 1940s. By that time, they had about 70 local TV stations, which, you know, doesn't sound like a lot compared to today. But obviously, you know, your major cities are going to have them. And it took a long time. And we'll talk about when the FCC broke things up and allowed more than one per city as well. Mm-hmm. In a little bit. But in the 40s, this is where I was talking about sort of personality plus kind of coming and going. There were a couple kinds of weather forecasters on television when it first started really rolling out post-war. And that was the really sort of dry kind. Some of these people were former, they were veterans from the military who knew about the weather from, you know, doing that in the military. Sometimes they were just really stuffy science types. Sometimes they were not science people at all, and they were just stuffy, but they were just kind of boring. But if you, you know, like I said at the beginning, you could lock into a job even back then,
right,
and have it through the 1960s and into the 70s, and that happened in a few occasions, right?
Yeah, there was a guy, the chief meteorologist at WTOP in Washington, D.C., Lewis Allen, and he was there for many decades. I'm not sure when he retired, but he was around for a very long time. There's people still alive that remember him as their weatherman, right?
Yeah.
And he was really well known. He was an incredibly accomplished meteorologist, but he was also a pretty good little drawer. And so he would draw and like what the next day's weather was going to be like. He called it a woodle, a weather doodle.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen from the research, if you have a little thing like that, or a good sign-off or something.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I mean, talk about endearing the public to you. That's all it takes, a woodle.
Yeah, go screw yourself, San Diego.
Yeah.
Clint Yule was another one. He became known nationally as Mr. Weather because he became the first national deliverer of weather in the late 1940s when he debuted on the Camel News Caravan on NBC. Camel Cigarettes, of course, sponsored that. And he worked out of Chicago, but kind of invented a system that would become the green screen later by putting a map, a Rand McNally map of the United States under plexiglass and then drawing on it with a race marker. And he would, you know, draw, you know, like weather fronts and rain and dry weather and stuff like that. He would draw words on it. Then it would move to color. He made those color markers. And he was the first sort of national dude to come around.
One little tidbit about Clint Ewell, that Rand McNally map, he had to bring it from home.
Yeah, it was his.
It's hilarious.
They didn't cover it. I mentioned the two types of weather people. This was sort of into the 1950s. So I guess it was three types. You had your sort of dry types, but in the 50s, they really wanted to spice it up. And that's when you got either your wacky men, like you mentioned, the rhyming weatherman, that was out of Bill Williams out of Nashville, or people that had puppets. Willard Scott was a very famous weatherman his entire career, but had always been pretty wacky and was Bozo the Clown on TV before that and was Ronald McDonald in TV commercials before that. I think the first Ronald McDonald.
Yeah.
But you had those wacky types, these weird men trying to inject a little entertainment into the news weather. And then you had what were known then as weather girls, which was, hey, let's get an attractive young woman. Let's put her in a nice fashionable outfit. Who cares if she knows meteorology? Let's just put her on our TV screen.
Yeah. And the first weather girl was Carol Reed at WCBS in New York. And they brought her on to go head to head with the weatherman Tex Antoine at WNBC. And the reason why was because it's like you said, the FCC opened up competition in 1952 for TV licenses. So that's where we got more than one local TV station.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden there was that competition and they figured out, well, people don't really take the weather all that seriously. It's not like crime or something like that. Let's
right.
use that to kind of gain viewers by just being a little wacky. So Tex Antoine, he had a cartoon named Uncle Weatherby, and he would blame Uncle Weatherby, the Weather Bureau, if he got it wrong. It was Uncle Weatherby's fault. And it was kind of like a gruff sidekick. And he was extraordinarily popular. So they brought Carol Reed on as an attractive 26-year-old who didn't have any training in meteorology, right?
Yeah.
But she was very likable. She had a good smile, and she had a good sign-off, Chuck.
I'm going to give it to you. You can't not take this.
Have a happy.
Have a happy. That's very nice.
Yeah. So she kicked off the whole weather girls thing.
Oh, yeah. There was another one named Ginger Stanley. She would sometimes get in her bathing suit and get in a tank of water on the CBS morning show to deliver the weather.
Yeah.
Another one, and this is hard to believe, they had in lingerie in bed.
Yeah.
In 1952.
I know.
Which I imagine the lingerie then was just some...
Head to toe.
Yeah, head to toe, you know, gown that just looked sort of silky to the touch would be my guess.
Sure.
And then you had the fact that it was a legit entry point, though, if you wanted to do serious news. So you would just get in however you could. Like Diane Sawyer was one of these quote-unquote weather girls in Louisville.
Right.
And they said, take those glasses off, hun.
Yeah, you know, men seldom make passes at girls who wear glasses.
Yeah, you look too smart. And Raquel Welch was, in fact, in San Diego, and she was the sun-up weather girl.
Back to the podcast, Raquel Welch at the time was known as Raquel Tejada.
Yeah, which means lime tree.
Oh, does it?
Yeah, Raquel Lime Tree.
That's awesome. And Raquel means squeeze.
And Welch means grape juice.
Wow. I'm starting to see the pattern now.
I think in 1961 was sort of the apex of the weather girl phenomenon when they had 466 TV stations nationwide, and about three quarters of them were using weather girls. And that's, you know, generally not the case anymore. When you see a woman that is the local meteorologist, and at least in a big city, chances are she has her meteorology degree.
Yes.
And is certified as well.
It's definitely not a novelty or like they're using sex appeal to like get people to watch the weather. That's not what they're ostensibly doing any longer. But what I found interesting was that Carol Reed, who started the Weather Girl era, also ended it when she was let go in 1964, I believe. That's considered the end of the Weather Girl era too. And the reason that the Weather Girl era came to an end is because the pendulum, which had started with stuffy academics and then swung to women in lingerie in bed giving the weather,
yeah,
was started to swing back the other way, where the actual, like, legitimate meteorologists are like, hey, what we're doing is actually kind of important, and it's not as easy as you guys think. So we want a little more respect. And so to help kind of give them respect, the American Meteorological Society and the National Weather Association started coming up with certifications and seals of approval that a legit meteorologist on TV who is doing good work could get and basically use as like a bona fide.
Yeah. Like, why did I go to college and study this and work on training my hair part for the past 15 years?
Yeah.
And put all of this money into hairspray if I can't get on TV because there's a lady in her lingerie in bed?
You know, I'm in the process of training my hair part. My hairdresser, Michael.
Oh, retraining it to something else?
Moved it over. Yeah. He thought it was over way too close to my ear. So he's moving it a little closer toward the crown of my head.
Very interesting.
It is interesting, and it's actually kind of a rough transition period because my hair wants to go back down, but I just got to go back up this way, and it doesn't always want to do that. I constantly run my stupid fingers through my stupid hair. It's awful, and they by doing that, because it's been cold lately, it creates a lot of static, so it just ends up like stuck to my forehead in one large mass, and I end up with a helmet head. Ironically, looking like a 1970s weather person.
My hair, I've been getting it cut on the sides and in the back. And I've been doing all kinds of crazy hair stuff since the pandemic. But
sure.
What I realize is, I think what I'm subconsciously going for is the haircut I had in high school was when I had like the long, all one length bangs skater cut and kind of shaved up on the sides and in the back. I'm getting there.
Can't quite envision that.
I'll send you a picture of.
But also you with bangs for real?
Well, not bangs like combed straight down on my forehead.
Oh, so not like Anthony Kiedis's current haircut kind of thing.
No.
Okay.
I'm swooping it up and over like always, but it's just sort of that all one length sort of thing.
I'm still having trouble.
I'll see you on tour soon.
Okay, good.
Then we can talk about each other's hair in the green room.
Okay, so let's move on beyond our hair, right? Because we're coming to another pivotal watershed moment in TV weather people history.
Yeah, we're coming to the Anchorman years.
Yeah.
This was, like you said, that movie was true in a lot of ways. And in the 1960s, sort of the late 60s, WABC in New York said, all right, you know, the news had always been sort of a serious affair. Like when you think of national news, you think of like the Walter Cronkites and stuff like that. It wasn't like the news as we know it today, even locally. And WABC in New York said, you know what, let's transform our newscast and have a little more fun with it. It was called Happy Talk or Happy News. And we'll have this news team. We'll have two very personable anchors. Like everyone's got to be personality plus now.
Right.
Everyone's got to kind of joke around as you go to commercial, or maybe the weatherman even, or the sports person interjects from, you know, the side when they're talking a news story. Obviously not, you know, if it's like a really serious story, they don't come in and joke. But if it's the cat stuck in the tree and the little old lady who scaled it to get it down, everybody in the newsroom is now this one big fun group laughing and joking about it.
Right. And the goal is to make the viewer think that they're watching like a group of friends who hang out like off hours and stuff like that too, right?
Yeah, like Anchorman.
Exactly, right? Like that was the thing. Like in Anchorman, they actually did that. And they were, I didn't realize it, but they were parodying Happy Talk, Happy News.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a news manager specifically named Al Primo who was brought into WABC to get ratings up, who was credited with coming up with that format.
What a name.
Within a decade, every single TV station still today has the Happy Talk format. So the weather person factors into this because, Chuck, they had to have their own personality. And they went back to basically Jimmy Fiddler's personality and adopted that permanently as this happy, peppy, science-y type. In fact, a lot of weather people, especially like local stations in smaller markets, are called upon to basically explain science stuff sometimes. Like they're just the in-house egghead, basically.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, they're the only person on staff with a science degree, probably.
Right. So there was one thing that really kind of also happened from the Happy Talk format, aside from it just existing. Tex Antoine, who I mentioned, he was brought on to WNBC in the 50s and gave everybody else a run for their money. He got canceled long before anybody ever even thought of the word canceled. But he, as part of his Happy Talk spiel, he would often like make funny comments on news stories. And right. I think it became so ingrained in his patter that he didn't always stop and think what he was saying. And this is definitely a case of that.
Yeah. So he got fired kind of immediately, I think.
Yeah. From what I saw, for sure. And there were a lot of people stepped up to try to bring him back or whatever. They were like, nope, that was definitely over the line.
All right. Should we take a break?
Yes.
All right. Let's take a break and we will talk about, let's talk more about weather people right after this.
Hey, everybody. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good. You're feeling low and not sure you can pull out a win. And that's when you have to dig deep, lift your head up, and say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists and take as much of your friend's money as you possibly can.
That's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies.
That's right. You can play on countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball. And you can charge other players rent for your iconic properties.
Plus, you can even work with your friends to crack open community chests in tournaments to get rewards and climb the leaderboard.
So get back out there, put on your game face, and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play.
That Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, they just disagree on how.
We're gonna get across that wasteland, and we're gonna do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.
And now a word from the show's sponsors at Betterment. Let's talk about hustle culture, shall we? You know, the whole rise and grind, go big or go home thing. It's a lifestyle that might not be for you.
That's right, but one that your money can handle thanks to Betterment. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle.
How? Good question. Their automated technology optimizes your investments again and again. With Betterment, your money is taking ice baths at 5 a.m. while you get your well-deserved rest. Your money downs protein smoothies and automatically reinvests your dividends, all before you head out the door. Your money is a workaholic.
But you don't have to be, because you've got Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. So visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
Okay, Chuck, so one thing that we've kind of been tracking here is this kind of evolution, this progression of delivering the weather on TV. And one of the big technological advances was the launch of the GOES-1 geostationary satellite over the U.S. back in 1975. Because now we had serious AV that the weather people didn't have before. You could string together these pictures taken every half hour of cloud formations and basically do like a flip book on TV and show people the clouds moving across the United States. And if you watch today, that the cloud movement that just keeps resetting over and over again, you know, during the this like one specific part of the weather cast, that is the exact same thing. It's probably not coming from GOES-1 anymore. It might be, but it's definitely in that the legacy of the GOES-1 satellite.
Oh, yeah. And if you're watching the news in the mid-70s and all of a sudden you see a front literally moving for the first time, like, you're pretty knocked out. It was a big deal. People really loved it. The green screen comes along in the 80s. That's what you mentioned earlier when you are standing in front of a green screen. And maybe we should do like a short stuff on chroma key technology.
All right. We should do it in front of a green screen.
We should. We've done stuff in front of green screens before.
Oh, yeah. Lots. Fact. Sure.
But yeah, they're standing there. They're looking off screen at monitors. They are pointing, you know, you know, it takes a little time to learn how to master pointing at a blank screen and lining it up correctly. So you're pointing at, you know, Kansas City and not Ames, Iowa,
right?
By accident. Doppler comes along as sort of the next big thing, or NEXRAD, next generation radar. That was in the early 90s. And another big game changer, as far as, you know, just more in-depth and detailed weather forecasting, and also how to, like, you know, broadcast it for people's eyeballs.
Right. Yeah, because you could see into the storm now. You could talk about the precipitation, like, inside the storm. It was really, I mean, next generation.
Next gen. Aptly titled. So then we get to the big question, which a lot of people may wonder, is, like, do these people, I know they have meteorology degrees, but, or a lot of times do, but do they come up with their own forecasts, or do they just get a printout of the national weather forecast and read it on the air and move their hands around a screen? And it's a little bit of both. Sure, they get all of their weather, basically, data-wise, from the National Weather Service and from the NOAA. Why not? That's where it all lives. That's where you're going to get the most accurate stuff. They're not going to be stubborn and be like, well, I don't want to use this stuff. They all use it, but they are, like, generally people that have lived in this place for a while, or, you know, after they gain experience, they also gain weather experience. And you might hear a local person say, like, you know, this front is coming through, but, you know, as we've seen before in Atlanta, like in, you know, 8 years ago when we had this happen, when we thought that was going to happen, like, their experience and their sort of color commentary is their own, and it very much comes into play and is relevant.
My understanding, too, is that they're taking this data from the Weather Service and NOAA that they provide, and having to interpret it themselves, analyze it, interpret it, and then I guess broadcast it in an understandable way, right? So it's not like the Weather Service or NOAA just sends out, like, hey, you can, here's format A. If you want to be spicy today, here's right. One that's a little edgy. It's nothing like that.
It's not written for broadcast now.
Right. So even if you don't have a meteorological degree, you have to understand how to read and interpret that kind of data. And I don't think it's so arcane that, like,
no,
like the sigma characters used repeatedly or anything right. Like that. I think you can make heads or tails of it because it's free and open to the public, right?
Yeah.
It's available to everybody. But there's no purpose in not using that information. That's what everybody does. It's what they've been doing since 1870. And it's one of those, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah.
And at the same time, there's a lot of work that they have to put into putting the puzzle pieces together and giving a clear picture.
Absolutely. If you're doing the morning news, you are showing up to work at like 3:30, 4 in the morning, depending on what time your first broadcast is.
Yeah.
Some of those first local news broadcasts are, you know, 4:30, 5 a.m. And they got to be there and know what's going on and look fresh and be ready to go. Get those morning eye bags calmed down.
Right. Speaking of that, Chuck, most of them do their own hair and makeup unless you're in a really big city.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Was there a poll?
No, actually, I should probably shout it out. I read a post from tropicalweather.net.
Uh-huh.
Could not for the life of me find out who wrote that, but they were clearly like a former TV weathercaster.
Uh-huh.
And they talked about, you know, day in the life of a weathercaster. And one of the things was, like, they're like a one person show. Like, they do almost all their own stuff unless they're in a really large market.
Yeah. I mean, if you're in a small market, you don't have a weather team of like five or six people putting all this stuff together for you. You're like, you know how to work the software, the graphic software. You're like you said, you're doing it on your own. Basically, if you're in a bigger city, then you're going to have like your weather team and stuff like that. And especially if you get to the tippy top of like a Dallas Rains, I mentioned him a couple of times. He's the LA guy forever. He may still be for all I know.
What about Storm Fields?
Yeah. Like if you're sort of a weather celebrity in a big market, then I'm sure that you've got hair and makeup and you've got people putting together all your stuff for you generally.
Right.
But, you know, otherwise you're kind of in the trenches doing the hard work. You probably don't go out into the field as much if you're in a big city. But if you're the small market person, you're probably still the one that's standing out in the rain at times during a big storm.
Yeah. One of the other things too, is when you get this picture of the weather together, it's like 4 a.m, you have to brief the news manager on whether any of the weather warrants any news coverage, which I hadn't thought about. But that's totally true. I mean, sometimes the weather makes the news, and that's from coordinating with the news manager and the weathercaster.
You mean like additional, like it's a news story?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, so in addition to just all of the weather stuff, there's a lot of things that weathercasters cover that we don't, that don't really have anything to do with the weather, but we still expect the weathercaster to give it to us. Celestial events, mm-hmm. pollen counts,
oh, yeah.
fishing forecasts.
Of course.
All sorts of that stuff. Like, yeah. if you think about it, not really part of the weather. And in fact, that tropicalweather.net really dryly put it that the public relates astrological events to weather, considering that it is viewed in the sky.
Yeah, that's about it.
It's kind of true. We all kind of think of that as weather, but it has really not a lot to do with weather. But the weather people have to look that up too. They have to research local events to put the weather in context. Like, is the big May Day parade going to get right. rained out?
Of course.
Like that kind of thing. So it takes the weather and makes it personal and important to you by saying like this thing you're going to may or may not get rained out. And the weather person has to know all of that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. When they're not in the studio and doing weather stuff, they're usually pretty active in the community. You're not going to find like a local TV weather person that's just like a shut-in off hours and doesn't get involved. I think they're very much expected, and it's good for their brand, obviously, to get out in the community, to be the guest judge at the chicken wing fling, which, by the way, I'm doing coming up soon.
Oh, really?
In Atlanta, I'm a celebrity judge for the Kirkwood wing fling.
Wow.
In May.
Best of luck.
So if anyone wants to come down there and heckle me, feel free. Visit elementary schools and go talk about weather stuff there. And like I said, you're your own brand, so it will behoove you to build your brand, and you do that through social media. So
yeah,
chances are you got a big, or hopefully a big Instagram following, or you're on Twitter or whatever. Like, you know, it's just like any other on-air personality. You want your name to be out there.
Okay, so you got up and got to work at 3:30. You yeah. took all of the tea leaves from the National Weather Service and NOAA, put them together into a picture that you can share with people. Mm. You made literal pictures of this stuff as graphics. You probably, in between the morning news and, say, the noon news, if you're doing both of those, you taped a broadcast for the website. Mm-hmm. You had to tweet the whole time to try to build your social media following. And then after work, you had to go to an elementary school to give a talk about weather, and then go home, eat, go to bed, and then get up the next morning at, I don't know, 2:45 or 3. That's the life of a weather person.
No, you go to the local fern bar.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. That's probably, you could fit that in there somewhere. You could fit a Harvey Wallbanger or two in.
Yeah, that's what you do in the 70s. But yeah, it's a tough job. I mean, you lost me at 2:45 in the morning.
No doubt. And then also unless you're the top of the heap, they're going to tell you you need to work on the 4th of July, on Christmas, on Thanksgiving. Like, and I saw one of the ways, again, from tropicalweather.net, if you want to get your foot in the door, basically say, I will be the guy that works on Christmas and Thanksgiving, and just get me on TV. Let me show everybody what I've got. I got 5,000 followers on Twitter. Give me a shot. Give me
Not afraid to stand in front of a tornado.
Right. That's another one, too. I mean, standing in storms is, like you said, it's a real hazard of the job, but they kind of, depending on who you are, you kind of have to do it.
Yeah. And that's become a more of a thing, I think, in the last like 20 years or so. Like, I remember watching the Weather Channel in the 80s, and I don't remember seeing a ton of that, but people watch the Weather Channel now to see who, what's the guy's name? Jim Cantore. Yeah, Jim Cantore.
Literally.
You know, is this the one where he's going to be swept out to sea or not?
Yeah, the one, Dave linked to a clip of Hurricane Ian and Jim Cantore in it hanging onto a street sign.
Yeah.
And behind him is like a stop sign that's been bent at the base and is just flipping back and forth. And if that thing swung, it would chop Jim Cantore right in half. Like, yeah. Those things are heavy and they can be sharp at high speeds. So it is definitely dangerous. But you said that it was from the 90s or something that they started going out in the weather. Apparently, Dan Rather's credited as one of the first reporters to go out in a hurricane, Hurricane Carla, in 1961, when was just a little cub reporter at KHOU in Houston. And he went out and showed what it was like out in the hurricane and kind of set that trend that I think you're right. It wasn't something that you would see until later on after the Weather Channel really kind of got into it.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it became a little more like the Storm Chasey thing.
Uh-huh.
Kind of caught hold more. Weather
Thanks
Channel
to Bill Paxton and Helen Hunt.
Which is funny. I know I've said this before, but Emily loves Twister. And it is just so not her thing. And my joke that I've used over and over the years when people talk about Emily's taste in movies is Emily likes two types of movies, small indie dramas and Twister.
Liking Twister is so high-o, though.
It is so high-o, now that I think about it. And she was obsessed with tornadoes growing up because of so high-o.
For sure.
But yeah, the Weather Channel came around in 82. So I never really thought about it. When I was watching it in like 88, it was still pretty new. John Coleman was the brainchild behind it. He got a start in the 70s and eventually was the weather person for Good Morning America. And he was one of the ones that was like, you know, people want to watch people. They don't tune in for the weather. They tune in to watch the weather person. Which is sort of true and sort of not.
Yeah. I guess it depends on the weather person, really, if you think about it.
But they also want to hear the weather.
Right. Right. Although, you know, I have something to confess. I have trouble paying attention and focusing sometimes.
Okay.
I don't think in the history of my entire life I've ever absorbed a weather report. Ever.
Really?
I'll watch the whole thing and at the end I'll be like, I have no idea what the weather's going to be tomorrow. Every single time.
I haven't watched a weather report in a long time.
I watch local and national news almost every night. So it happens almost every day.
I haven't watched local news since in probably 20-something years.
Oh, you're missing out, buddy.
No, I'm not into it. I don't turn on the TV before 8 p.m.
I don't know.
Well, except for Jeopardy.
Okay, that's 7:30, so
yeah,
still.
But then it goes back off at 8.
So
usually until 9.
Does it really? There's that hour of power where you're just sitting there meditating?
No, that's when bedtime for Ruby happens. So you can't have a screen on because she'll just be like, must watch.
Right. I don't care. I want to watch how the Equalizer ends tonight.
Oh, dude, she'll watch. She was watching the stupid ads on the gas pump the other day from the car.
Oh, my God.
I was like, this is sick.
Yeah, that's a problem, Chuck. You got a problem on your hands there.
And she said, screw you, Dad.
So, well, there's your other problem, too. That and Emily loving Twister. You got a lot of problems.
That's right. But you know what's not one? The weather. Because I use my weather apps. That's how I ingest the weather. I guess I'm like a Gen Z because they've done research. Pew Research, even. The best research.
Yeah.
And they found that 42% of people over 65... still follow the local news very closely. And 51% of that group of people get their local news from local TV broadcasts.
Sure.
If you go to under 30, it drops down to 15% follow the local news very closely. And 26% prefer to get their news from TV.
Right. So 60% of that group like get it from online.
Yeah. I mean, I want to see who that 15% of 20-somethings is. This following the local news very closely on television.
I think it's like a retro kind of thing. They also write letters by hand and stuff like that.
Maybe that's it.
That's my guess. But so you could make a pretty good point that the TV weathercaster is like, you know, a walking dinosaur. They're doomed, right?
nah.
The thing is, no, you're right. The thing is if the Pew also did another poll where they asked people like, what's the most important part of a local newscast? And everybody, 70% of people said the weather.
Yeah.
It topped crime. Sports was second to last, just above restaurants, clubs, and bars, which I found really surprising, but because they treat the sports department like they're just gods or something.
Yeah.
So the weather person, as long as there's local news, there's going to be weather people because they're the bright, shining star of the whole thing as far as the viewing public goes, even if they're not particularly portrayed or treated that way. Although it feels like in recent years, like they've started to really kind of spotlight the weather person a little more and how smart they are and reliable and how great their family thinks they are, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And you know, I bet they had the same fears just about local news, period, once national news became a thing on TV.
Yeah.
And it'll always be around because I just think people like, I like that it's still on. I don't watch it. But I love that, I mean, the TV was on in a restaurant I was at the other night, and that's where I saw Ken Cook was still around.
Yeah, cool.
I was like, wow, look at him still going.
Yeah.
And Jeff Hollinger used to be the sports guy. I think he's a anchor now.
But that's the thing. I mean, like you can not, you know, participate or take part in something and still be bummed if it isn't around anymore.
No, I agree.
You know?
Yeah.
So there's another kind of route that some weathercasters are taking to wrap all this up. And that is to basically interpret the weather as far as like climate change goes.
Yeah.
And Dave put it really perfectly that they're evolving into basically a science reporter who doesn't just forecast the weather, but puts it into context, particularly these days in the context of climate change.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty good new direction for them to go in. It makes a lot of sense. And talk about making yourself relevant.
Yeah. Well, I mean, depending on what city you live in, that's probably welcome or not welcome. I did see John Coleman. I was looking, trying to find clips of him on YouTube. And there was one, I couldn't find out what year it was, but one where he did a full segment poo-pooing climate change, basically, in the data.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I thought it was pretty interesting.
The guy who founded the Weather Channel?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, man, that reminds me. There's a book called Merchants of Doubt I think I've talked about before, and it's really unnerving. It's about stuff like that. It's about people who, I'm not accusing John Coleman of this, but it's about scientists who are basically paid by huge companies to sow doubt among the public about whether the science behind things like climate change or tobacco causing cancer was actually legitimate or not, and really set the world back. In all sorts of really evil ways. It's really tough to read.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, really, that was a weird way to end this episode, but that's how we're going to end it.
Yeah, I got nothing else.
All right, well, since Chuck said he's got nothing else, everybody, that means it's time for listener mail.
This is about Dolly Parton. We had a fun recent episode on Dolly.
Yeah.
Her Majesty. And this is from John Pizarik, who lives in Japan. Hey guys, wanted to chime in with a fun Dolly Parton fact to just show how she has become incorporated in all sorts of cultures. I've included a picture for reference, but in dental school, when you learn to do fillings, we use a thin metal band to help shape the fillings for the tooth. However, sometimes a filling would be particularly deep or large, and instead of using the standard type 1 band, you would need to use a type 2 band to help students remember what the type 2 band looks like. They were affectionately known as the Dolly Parton Band because of the bust-like appearance she became famous for. And he's showing me these little bands, and one just looks like a sort of a bent popsicle stick, like a boomerang-shaped popsicle stick.
Uh-huh.
And one looks like a boomerang popsicle stick with boobs.
Wow.
Where the boomerang meets in the center.
Yeah, I can check that out.
So that must be what he's talking about. I know Chuck has had his fair share of dental experience. I would almost guarantee that most dentists know the reference if you were to bring this up. Probably not going to do that, John, just so you know. Thank you for all you do. I wish my trip to D.C. from Japan was able to coincide with your show, but it, alas, is not the case. So
sorry, John.
Yeah, sorry about that, John.
Well, thanks for a great email, though. We appreciate that. We always love learning new weird things. And that was a new weird thing for us. Right, Chuck?
New for me.
If you want to get in touch with us like John did, send us an email. Send it off to stuffpodcast@iheartradio.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. But you know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line, thanks to Visible. It's true. So switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.